Aloha, ladies and gentlemen. Not a thing? Okay. Welcome to the experience. I am your host, Jeremy Vaney, and this week we have a bit of a different episode. Around Halloween time-ish, I put out a call on a local Hawaiian Facebook page for guests, for anyone who has sort of a paranormal story they'd like to share. And actually, one person got back to me. Her name is Isabella, and we will hear from her soon. It is a short interview. It begins sort of in the middle of a conversation where she's telling me about a mysterious bunch of phone shenanigans that happened, I think, shortly after we spoke the night before. So it's going to pick up right around there. It's not a very long interview, and afterwards, I'm going to talk to Dr. Tyler Kochjohn, a microbiologist extraordinaire, about what he's hearing here, because I'm wondering if some of the things she's talking about have answers in medical science, and if some things might be paranormal. And is it possible to tell the difference? So, like I said, this will be different. Subscribers get to feel the difference right now. Non-subscribers, after these messages.
This is Whitley Strieber. Listen to me now from June of 2010 talking to Alan Lammers about an incredible thing that happened to him on the island of Sulawesi in Indonesia.
Here you are in South Sulawesi in the little town in the district of Sandu Batu. What happened? You were told something rather strange.
Well, we were told before we went, like my friends that I work with with the NGO, they told me that when you pack, because it kind of happened by accident, I went out to buy a raincoat. It rains quite a bit in this part of the world. And so I went out and I bought a yellow raincoat. And my friend said, "I'm sorry, you can't take that to Walla Walla." And I said, "Well, why not?" And he says, "Well, you can't wear that color." So anyways, excuse me. So I thought, okay, well, what colors can I wear? They said, "Well, you can only wear black or white. You cannot wear any bright colors, no bright green, especially no yellow, and, you know, that's all you should bring." And I said, "Well, what would happen?" And they said, "Well, people disappear."
You will find the rest of that story, and it is brain-bending, in the June 5th edition of Dreamland, June 5, 2010 edition of Dreamland in the unknowncountry.com archive. This archive is one of the richest of its kind in the world, probably is the richest of its kind in the world, filled with extraordinary shows, of which this show is certainly one, this show with Alan Lammers. You will never have heard anything like it. It does what Dreamland is here to do. It opens your mind to the fact that we live inside a hidden reality that we prefer not to acknowledge, but not here. Here on unknowncountry.com, we do acknowledge it. We live in it and we love it. Subscribe today. You can't go wrong. Go to unknowncountry.com right now and get started.
Last night.
Mm-hmm.
I was on the phone with my boyfriend. Yeah, all of a sudden, we heard the phone dialing my number. And my boyfriend heard it too.
Hmm.
And then all I saw was my granddaughter's number. And my phone, you know what that dialing did? You press a button there.
Uh-huh.
He heard it loud and clear, and I heard it loud and clear. Well, I was at my daughter's house. I was talking to my boyfriend on the phone. All of a sudden, I could hear the phone go beep, beep, beep. Got a number, like, calling out. When I looked, I saw my granddaughter's number on the phone. And my boyfriend heard it too. Just fine, because our phone, the iPhone, also has those dial numbers, you know, dial for the party. We heard them loud and clear. Even my boyfriend heard them too, you know. What is that? I said, I don't know. And my granddaughter called me. The grandma said, Carol, I never call you. She said, had my number on the phone.
Huh.
Funny, you know, weird, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was talking to my boyfriend. Then all of a sudden, the phone was starting to dial out. And my phone, you know, those iPhones, like, for dial out. Because I get iPhone. And my boyfriend heard them too. He said, what is going on? I said, I don't know. Then my granddaughter called me and said, no, I never called you. Had her number on the phone.
Hmm.
Kind of spooky, yeah?
Yeah. Well, let me ask you. We were talking last night about some of your odd experiences. And I want you to talk about them. But one thing that you said in particular is that you see, I don't know, beings or something out of a spot on one of your eyes. Is that right? And when did that start?
On my right eye, there's a beauty spot. And I was born in Kohala. And this Filipino old lady told my mom that I can see vision. And I see where I live in my apartment condo. One day I saw a couple sitting on my couch. Because nobody can come in my apartment because my door is locked. And they disappear. The other day I saw a lady standing in the hallway and she disappeared. And one day I saw a guy in the kitchen all in black. And then one night, my bedroom light was off. We've been turned on and off. So what the hell is going on? Then something this year, I think, or last year, I go to church. I came home. Someone hit my bedroom wall. Big noise. And the security guard heard him too, so I would check on my patio. No more rock. And he came with no more rock. Then he said he felt something on him, touching him, and the captain ran. I don't, no more big rock, big noise, yeah. Boom,
so,
like a bomb.
So you hear a loud noise, the security guard shows up. He doesn't see anything, but he feels something touch him.
No, he was there standing, and then he heard, I told the security guard, you heard that? He said, I heard that, Isabel.
Huh.
And so he came and checked, no more the rock, no more big rock. Then when he went back in the hallway, somebody even touched him on his chest.
Huh.
Yeah, and then this past year, I do my exercise in the parking lot in White Tree Villas. I hear drums. No more drums because when I get bushes, get the water boat red, drums, like Tahiti dance.
Yeah.
Then, funny, you know. Then, last year I go to ladies' night at the Civic. On the way home, I saw this boy coming out white or park, all in red t-shirt. He passed me. I turn around. I don't see nobody. Then I turn left to go home. I'm meeting on the street. I hear horses in the back of me walking. Clunk, 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 clunk. As I turn, funny who walking in the back of me. I look. Nobody. I shine the first light. Nobody. It disappeared. The noise stopped because the light. House passing, it stopped. No more, they followed me home. Until I turned in, and I swear the F word. Yeah.
Huh. Well, let me ask you, when you see things, is it with normal vision, or is it in this one part of your right eye?
I see the vision. And I'm going to tell you this. When I was in the hospital, I had bladder surgery. I came out, they told me I don't get pain. And I'm lying on the bed. someone was watching me, and look, guess who I saw?
Who?
Jesus!
What?
In the corner, looking at me. I won't forget Jesus looking at me. I wasn't afraid. And my pain went away. Then another surgery.
What did Jesus look like?
Another surgery. Wait, hold on, let me finish.
Okay, sure.
And then another surgery. And then doctor came to talk to me. Jesus was in the back of the doctor. I wasn't listening to the doctor. All I heard is saying, to be okay. I saw Jesus in the hospital 2 times. Whole body of Jesus looking at me. And then I came better. And then sometimes I see in my apartment a big brown circle. I see Jesus in my apartment. My right eye has a beauty spot where I can see vision.
Hmm.
When I told my neighbors about my apartment, they say it's weird because nothing happened in the apartment, but it's happening in my.
Let me ask you, when you see Jesus, is there a feeling that goes with it, or just you see him and then you're healed?
No, because I was suffering in pain, in pain, and then when he took out my stomach, and my pain went away.
Huh?
Nothing. I had no pain.
But as far as seeing Jesus, do you feel anything for him? Like, do you feel love? You said you didn't feel fear. Do you feel love? Do you feel joy? Do you feel anything different in his presence?
I know him because I know he came to heal me.
Okay.
And then, liver surgery, he appeared in a doctor, and I saw him clearly. He looked at me, and then he went. When I said, Jesus, I said, last week, Wednesday, I saw him around 9:30 in the morning in the corner of my TV, on the white. And that next day, I saw a little angel on my wall.
And
I wasn't afraid.
So is there a difference in the way you feel around an angel or Jesus as opposed to when you're hearing drums or something that sounds like a ghost kind of thing? Is there a difference in how you feel?
It's a different story. I feel better because he came to heal me.
Right. And as far as the I don't know what to call it, haunting, poltergeist, whatever that activity is, we were talking and you said you think it was related to there used to be a village there, a Hawaiian village, and a stream where there were bodies?
Yes. Someone told me, somebody came on my iPhone when another person came on. Not only you and why your village is haunted? Because when we had the tidal wave, a lot of people died in the river, and this person said they have to bring the bodies out of the water.
Right.
Someone came after you. Another person came on the phone. They said, Isabel, where you live is haunted.
Hmm.
It's haunted because Hawaiian village, the other people died over here. And the person said a lot of murders over here.
Huh.
Murders.
Huh.
Hawaiian village, yeah. So I'm trying to get out of here.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
I'm 78 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I was a marathon runner before.
Mm-hmm.
And then I take care of myself, okay? When I get 3 children. The boy is 58, the girl is 54 and 52.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody believes just my children.
Does anyone else, any of your neighbors, do they have anything like this happen to them?
No. I asked them and they said no.
Okay.
And not only me.
Yeah.
A lot of people get the experience like me. What is it, Obaki?
Yeah. I mean, Hawaii seems to be a spiritually active place, for sure. This island in particular.
Yeah. Kind of scary, you know.
It's interesting. Isabel, thank you for sharing your stories with us. I really appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
And now we turn it over to my co-host, Tyler Kochjohn, to tell us what the heck we just heard. Tyler, what did we just hear?
Well, I don't know. It was interesting.
Oh, hey, Tyler, welcome to the show, by the way, buddy.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. That was a very interesting account. The thing that always intrigues me is shared experiences. So when she talked about, I can't remember now, was it a postman or somebody that heard the same thing and then felt something brush him?
A guard at the complex she lives in. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So those are always very interesting because it argues that this wasn't something that was spontaneously occurring inside one person's mind.
Yeah. Well, so, but some of it does freak me that way, too. That's what's interesting about it. Actually, I mean, the thing that the original reason I was kind of intrigued to talk to her was one of the first things she mentioned was, I think after having surgery, that she would have these visions in the, you know, like lower quadrant of her right eye or something like this. And it struck me like, oh, maybe this is like Whitley, you know, when Whitley talks about a slit opening up and he sees things and, you know, then writes books that way. Could this be similar to that? But the more she talked about it, the more it actually sounded not like that. Sounded maybe more surgery-related phenomenon, but I'm not certain. And so I kind of wanted to get you in here to talk about that. But also, one thing that I left out of the show, because it was laden with swear words, which I will replace the swear word with the word poo, is, I mean, essentially she just described going to work and smelling as though she had dog poo on the bottom of her shoe the entire time, and there wasn't any, and there was no dog poo around, there were no dogs around where she worked, you know, so sort of an olfactory sense, you know, phenomenon, let's call it hallucination something. And I'm just wondering, when we talk about visual hallucinations and we talk about scent hallucinations and even auditory hallucinations, do any of these types of things, does one happen more with age than another? Like she said, she's 78 years old. Is that a contributing factor?
If they have other underlying conditions, Parkinson's, dementia, other like Alzheimer's dementia, which is the most common, it certainly could enter in there. So I think, yes, you would say it does have an age-dependent increase, but it doesn't have to be limited by the person's age necessarily.
And also, it was probably hard to understand for people, but at one point she was talking about that she got another call on her iPhone from someone else, not me, who told her that the place was haunted. And I think what she's referencing there is she's been on another show. So just so you know, I think that's what she's saying, is that she's been on another show and that like the host of that show told her that her location, her area is notoriously haunted. And as she said, there have been murders there and there was, you know, a village was wiped out by a tsunami, I think it was, or a typhoon, I think a tsunami. So there's that. And we know that this plays into a lot of sort of paranormal activity on this island. So it's interesting to me that there are things here that may have to do with I mean, I don't know what underlying conditions she might have, but maybe with age, maybe with surgery, but then also this sense of paranormal stuff. And, you know, hearing drums, that's something that is not unique, right? People hear phantom chanting, phantom drumming, this sort of thing. Hawaiians do, especially. So is there a way to parse out what's what, do you think, when you hear something like this? Like, if you, and I don't know that you're ever going to say something was definitely paranormal, but if you were to go down that road, would you see a difference?
No, I don't think we'd be able to cleave it apart that neatly. Seriously, we would wonder what's going on, and we are aware that some of these neurological findings are in fact associated with disordered cognition, and so we would never be sure. We can impute certain things to people, but we can't live that experience for them. As real as it is to them, I think this would be a real problem.
It's interesting to me to think about, like, on this show, I hadn't thought about this till just now, but I think I probably concentrate more on the personalization of this stuff, right? So, like, when Michael Shermer, for instance, gets married and an old radio impossibly goes on inside of a desk and, you know, plays the tune that indicates that his wife's dead father, you know, sort of approves of this union or whatever it is. You know, that is a very personalized sort of paranormal event that shakes a notorious skeptic to his core. That is for him. And there's a lot of things in UFO world, in ghost world, and obviously when, you know, grandma comes and says, I've died and I'm just fine, don't worry about me, that's obviously personal. But I think there's a personalization to a lot of this stuff that maybe certain heart cultures don't necessarily have, but their worldviews, at least all the ones that I know about, is that when you die, you're still here, right? Like, the ancestors are still here, and they are ancestors in the making, you know? Like, it's one big happy family. And so, is it possible that there are places like Hawaii where that is still very much alive, and it affects the way paranormal interaction occurs, so that it's more impersonal? You would just hear drumming. There would just be these phenomena around you because these beings are around you, or at least that's the general perception, as opposed to it being something personal for her to experience for a reason. Or do you think that's a bridge too far?
No, not at all. I think it would be very much, I don't think the right word here would be context dependent. Basically how you grow up, the environment, all these things, what your expectations are. I think all those would filter out and feed in to what you finally experience, or say that you experience, or understand, your understanding of what you've experienced. I don't see any way around that. So if you think about a place where you had a tsunami wipe out lives, and there were other problems and a deep history, that would be, in my view, kind of a form of stress, and also something that this person is immersed in and lives in all of the time, and that has to affect you. You know, I mean, I wouldn't say take a toll, but it has to impact how you're interpreting things and seeing things and just reacting to things.
Well, and then specifically in terms of, I mean, let's just assume I got it right, because it sounds like there are two things about the eye. One is, it sounds as though someone told her early on that she has visions, or she has the ability to have visions. I mean, I get the sense that she's saying that, but then also that she's had visions associated with surgery.
Yes.
So, is there something about those surgeries that you know of? You're a doctor. That creates like sort of a window or a peripheral hallucination or series of hallucinations. Tendency toward hallucination, let's put it that way.
Yes, definitely. Some painkillers, narcotics, are notorious for introducing issues like this. Remember, what you're doing with some of these drugs very powerfully is changing the way the nervous system is working, and you're shutting certain things off and taking it totally out of balance. And so, you know, I mean, at that point, brakes are off, man. Stuff can happen. I can remember at Loyola, I had, Loyola University, I had a lot of friends who were dental students. And now this is 40 years ago. They were talking about the use of nitrous oxide as an anesthetic. And the patient doesn't lose consciousness the way that it was applied. But it had, that particular agent had really lost favor, because although it worked for many people, and particularly people that didn't like injections, it had a tendency to have patients imagination or remembering events that hadn't happened. Not really hallucinations, but it would really impact their account or memory of events. And so they kind of discouraged its use, at that particular time. I think people still do use it, but you have to be aware of what it can do to your patients. So yeah, Jeremy, those things can really have a huge effect.
And what do you think about the fact that she talks about these paranormal things and even the drumming? She sort of puts in the box of that's scary, right? That's kind of scary to think about. But then when she sees Jesus, her and an angel later, I wasn't scared is what she goes to. She doesn't seem to have an emotion about it outside of I wasn't scared. And then he healed her or he took the pain away, that sort of thing. What do you think that does that indicate something? That one thing is scary, what is the association with Jesus and angels? First of all, that would be scary. Maybe, I don't know.
No, I would think that if you thought this was the harbinger of your death, that you're being welcomed into heaven or something, but that might be a little alarming, but I can't really say.
I hadn't even thought about that, but yeah.
It's just kind of now trying to look at it and figure out what she was experiencing. But the thing of recognizing this image and feeling that this was Jesus and knowing that, he's a healer, that sort of thing would probably be very comforting. Again, I think you were asking her, how did you know what you were seeing was Jesus? How did you have that feeling? And I don't think she answered, but I think that might have been a language barrier. I'm not clear that she understood what you were driving at. But that would have been an interesting question. How did you know that was Jesus? And if you did, then I guess it'd be a lot easier to understand how, yes, the pain will go away now. He will help me.
Are you familiar with Jungian psychology? Like, are you into it?
No, not very well read at all on that.
Okay, because I'm just wondering, I've been YouTubing seminars and lectures and college stuff about Jung and about the collective unconscious essentially is the impersonal strain of consciousness that's a part of us, and the evidence that he came up with for that brought him to that and all that. So I've been looking into that, and it's interesting, and I just wonder if there is this impersonal strain of consciousness where these sort of living ideas exist. And one of them is Jesus or an angel. How does that interact with the personal, like in a blatant, does it interact with the personal in a blatant way? In other words, could we say that, like, is it possible you have surgery or you're in great pain, otherwise in great pain, and something comes out of the ether, out of the impersonal, and does heal you, presents a vision, does make you feel better, and it's not... it's not a hallucination from your own personal want, but maybe your own personal want sort of calls it forth anyway. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I suppose.
I just wonder, is there an interplay between if these are both us, the personal and the impersonal, and they're both floating around in our heads, or we think of it that way, but really we're probably floating around in it. Are there blatant interactions as opposed to just sort of like, well, you tap into an archetypal pattern, and then you sort of become that pattern. I mean, I guess that's the obvious way, but are there these other direct ways where something steps forth out of the psyche and does something blatant like this? Is that possible?
Sure. And, in every sort of scientific sense, structurally, we look at humans we're much closer together than anything that can drive us apart, although we're pretty good at that too with our ideas. But, you know, biochemically, we're all fairly close, I mean, really close, and the sorts of things that happen to one, I think we can expect that we can very easily extrapolate those to other conditions. Our interpretations may vary. They probably will a lot based on personal experience and education. So is that kind of where you're going?
No, I mean, I wasn't going anywhere, but now I am. Now I'll go here and ask you this. So if
we'll be back after this.
Ever wonder what the Close Encounter experience is all about? Think you know what it's about? When you open Whitley and Ann Streber's Immortal Communion Letters, you're going to experience a whole new vision, not something being told to us by researchers and theorists, but the actual testimony of people who came face to face with this unknown. Unforgettable. And the book is only $3.99 at Streber.com.
Welcome back.
If we look at medicine and you look and you see, okay, through trial and error, this works. Through placebo effect, people still feel better. And now we've got this added on thing that if you believe in Jesus enough or in the right way, that maybe he'll just come and heal you. And that if all, I know your answer would probably be like, well, as long as it, whatever works, works. But is the reason that it works, the percentage of time that one works more than another, is that a cultural construct? I mean, if we abandoned science, which I know you don't want to do, but if you did, if you abandoned medicine in an authentic way as a culture and started raising people to, I don't know, believe in Jesus or believe in, that you'll just heal yourself spontaneously, the placebo effect, I guess. Would that start happening? I mean, is there evidence that would say that all of this is cultural based? The way that we heal ourselves, even physically?
I'd say culture plus experience. My own personal experience, I can remember being really sick a couple of times as a kid, and the doctor, they did house calls back then, would show up. And Jeremy, honestly, the minute I would lay eyes on him, I would feel better. And that's because I had faith that he would make me better. And he hadn't done anything yet. You know, he probably, from my mom's description of what I had, he probably already knew what he was going to do. But just that expectation of good outcome is very powerful. I've felt it myself. And we do know that when it comes to subjective situations, like, does this hurt? Can you move better? A more subjective phenomenon, the placebo effect is very powerful, and we have to control for it in our studies. It's not so good, for example, if somebody's had a heart attack. There's only certain things that maybe can bring them back, so that there's not a great placebo effect there. But there certainly is in other instances. We have to respect that power. Some of us have experienced it and know that, you know, how real it is.
There's another way to look at that too, which is that you were sick and you know that the doctor comes and makes you feel better. And so what you're engaging with is actually the image. It's the projection from the past that you're dealing with at that point, right? So that now you've got this image of I'm sick. It's not even that you're sick that's the problem. It's I imagine that I am sick, and I imagine the worst of that. I imagine what that's going to feel like, and I imagine that this guy is the best thing, is going to cure me. And and so your feeling of sickness gets wrapped up in the imagery and the expectation rather than the actuality, and that's actually how we treat each other and how we treat life and why we're all going to die soon. So thank you, Tyler.
Oh, okay.
Wait.
No problem. You're no fun at all. Okay. I mean, just get that on the record.
Well, yes, thank you.
Yeah.
There's plenty of record of that, by the way.
Glad to help. I can't deny that there are a lot of built-in expectations, but part of that is experience. And so I would say intercessionary prayer could also help someone who has seen its benefits, and it has many benefits, you know, through their particular interactions in their church and elsewhere. All these things are also, though, based on experience. And, you know, that's undeniable. We can't get away from what we are. We have these events occur in our life, and we dutifully record them in our brains, by the way. And so, you know, I mean, we don't lose a lot. We may lose the conscious memory, but a lot of stuff sticks with us. There's one of the things that's very interesting with neuroscience is that the conscious activity of the brain is only a part of what's going on. There's a lot of subsurface activities that we're now aware of that are occurring that kind of keep the whole ship moving forward, if you want to think of that analogy. And so there's all kinds of interesting things going on below our sort of conscious awareness, or just below the surface, nonetheless very important.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. I often get asked, do I still have anything happen to me, you know, as far as like abductions or whatever, paranormal phenomena? Does it still happen? And my usual go-to answer is that I am it because of the Kundalini stuff at this point. But there's another answer, which is I live in Hawaii, and so it presents differently. So there are obvious things in nature that happen. You know, an owl swoops down at just the right time or whatever it is, you know. Something for you to witness in nature that has a specific timing, just like the radio going on for Michael Shermer. I wonder if, as we introduce more and more other perspectives, you know, quote unquote foreign perspectives here, will that change? Are we seeing it in nature because that's what the majority of people expect to see here, and so that's how it presents? And if you stop believing in nature, or you stop importing people, moving people here who feel an interconnected, their own interconnectivity within nature. If there are more and more people who are cut off from that and are more even science or quote unquote rational materialist oriented, does it change? Do you start seeing aliens and poltergeist phenomena? I wonder about that, Tyler.
I think you're onto something, Jeremy, and honestly, I don't know how far to push this, but you often have to wonder the way that, at least for the society that we're most familiar with, I guess modern Western American society, that I feel that a large part of problems or dissatisfaction that people have is that they have, in fact, been cut off from things in the natural world that we need but don't quite understand that we really need. And I think that if you have that void, you probably can't even articulate it, because it may be something that really, you know, you never really learned from your parents. Like, you never went hunting or fishing or had any experiences that would sort of inform you about what the natural world is. You got a void. You don't really even understand that it's a void, and so you maybe find ways, or ways find, you know, a means to manifest themselves, or sort of a hunger. I think that's one of the commonalities that people have. There's a hunger to be spiritual, and we've always seen that. And look at the Egyptians. You know, I mean, the societies that we know a little bit about. And all the, this weekend I was involved in a dark sky symposium. The many cultures that have very interesting ideas about what the stars are and what they mean and what they signal to us. And it just seems that these are fundamentals of human activity.
Huh. You just said that, and I had a flash of ancient aliens. You know, the concentration on is that aliens had better technology and came and gave us the pyramids or whatever it is, you know, gave us these great monolithic things in ancient times. But really, what is ancient alien technology? What is ancient to the aliens? And maybe being an owl is that. Maybe the fact that someone like, you know, Whitley Strieber or whoever sees an owl And then we come up with these excuses, right? Of like, oh, they're showing you that. It's a cover. It's a screen for what they really are. But maybe what they're really showing is the transition, is like, this is our old tech. We used to come to you as animals, but now, since you're disconnected from nature and all up in your heads, we got to come as the thing that you project forward, aliens. Maybe that is the truth of ancient alien technology. It's not about pyramids on the ground. It's about how simply how they present themselves to us. You know, I don't know. I just got a flash of that. So thank you, Tyler. But let's circle back to Isabella. And if you know, as a medical doctor, can you say that there's anything that you heard that still remains mysterious? I mean, I guess you're saying the fact that there was a witness to something is that enough for you? Or do you think that this could all be explained? It is. Okay.
No. I would say if we want to, Jeremy, we could come up with reasons that, oh no, this is all a hallucination. In fact, you could look at Oliver Sacks' book titled Hallucinations, and you can recognize that, yeah, some of these things are kind of familiar to what we see here. But no, I just don't think that it's very easy to dismiss the sort of shared events. And we all are prone to that we can pick up the vibes in a room. Maybe you've done that when you've had a speaker, a political speaker or something, you know, that sometimes there's a vibe that we get. And I firmly believe that's the case with other places on the planet, Hawaii being a good example. And so we're environmentally sensitive to cues that a lot of times we don't quite even maybe recognize. So I would not say, no, you know, this is not something that you go, oh, no, plainly this is X, you know. And she seemed very direct to me. The things that she described seem to be elicited from things that maybe happened, you know, her surroundings. And so that to me says it's not just coming out of nowhere, you know, in her brain, just spontaneously appearing. So, but the other thing you have to keep in mind is I'm not a neurologist. I'm not a medical doctor. And so there may be someone who actually is would say, oh, no, I know exactly what this is.
Well, wait a second. What kind of doctor are you? Are you like a Phil Imbrogno kind of doctor?
No, thank you.
Are you a small town country doctor from a small town? Is that the kind of doctor you are?
Good Lord.
What are you admitting to here, Tyler? Wait a minute. I thought you were a doctor.
I am a PhD, so I don't treat patients. Okay? I've worked in Alzheimer's disease biochemistry. I've been a microbiology person, clone genes, all that stuff. But I'm not a neurologist. I don't treat. I'm not a psychiatrist. And I can tell you honestly that none of those people would I think, give you a diagnosis. Just listening to the story, that they'd say, well, maybe it sounds familiar, but, you know, you'd really have to take a look. Mm-hmm. They would have to really examine the patient in more detail to reach a firm diagnosis. I think that would be the first thing that they would all say. But for me, I'm just not personally willing to say, oh, yeah, no, I know what this is. I don't. Simply don't.
Well, I have a question for you that no one on the planet has ever asked before. So get ready. Ooh. Are you ready?
After the Phil and Brogno thing? Yeah.
Tyler's never talking to me again, ladies and gentlemen. But while you have to be courteous to me on the phone here. So, you know how, like, I was going to ask you, have you ever worked with a cadaver before? But really, what I want to ask is, have you heard of stories of people working with cadavers, maybe as med students or whatever, who had a paranormal, ghostly, something like that phenomena or feeling, even feeling attached to it? Have you heard about that or read about that?
No, I haven't. I knew quite a few of the medical and dental students in my day, and the only thing that I can recall, even close to that, was being told that at one time, before I'd arrived there, the teachers thought it would be a good idea to give each student maybe a little life synopsis of the person who had donated their body. And that tended to freak the students out. It didn't. They were trying to develop, you know, the idea that, hey, this was a real person, you know, and so you need to work with respect and also acknowledge what their contribution to you and the future was. But as I understood it, it kind of backfired.
Okay. Well, have you ever heard of that, of someone having paranormal phenomena or the feeling of it or any of that dealing with genes?
No.
Okay. That's the question that I think.
No.
So if anyone ever has, because I'm sure someone will be able to point me to like a ghost book where like the person on the table comes to you as a ghost and you get scared and you run out of the room at a morgue somewhere. And I'm wondering, is that an issue of size? Like, is that because it's a body? But like, if you take the genes of a person and work on them or somehow incorporate them into mice and grow an ear off of a mouse, does the boogeyman come out and say boo then too? Or no, because that's just some genes and not the body. Like, what is the connection of between the material and the immaterial?
I think you're right. It's which one is maybe closer to you in terms of sort of like real like hard experience, something you can relate to. Where, you know, genes pretty abstract. You really don't see them. In a sense, you can see your body. It is interesting, though. I don't know if you read The Immortal Cells of Henrietta Lacks, that book about this woman. That's where they got these cells that were known as HeLa. And she died as a very young woman of a cancer. And before she went, they had harvested some of the tissue for pathology to see exactly what she had. But they also kept some of them alive in the laboratory. And this was 1952, I think, was the year when she passed away. And the cells, the HeLa cells, still live. And they've been used for all kinds of medical experiments. I mean, it's just advanced science terrifically. It was a sad story because, now again, we're looking back 50, 60, almost 70 years into the past, and things were done very differently than they are now. But she really didn't give informed consent, didn't say, yes, you're free to use my tissues for research. And the family was pretty offended by some of the things that transpired. Now, some of those wrongs have been corrected, as I understand it. But anyway, her cells still are alive, even though she herself had long since passed away. And I never worked with HeLa cells in the laboratory, but I did work with a lot of other cell lines that had come from people who had passed away. And it didn't, to my knowledge, it didn't really particularly affect any of my coworkers or me to any great degree, other than gratitude to have these things to do something good. But your point's well taken. There is a scale factor here, a familiarity factor.
Hmm. Is there anything else about Isabella that we didn't cover that we need to cover?
Well, she's very, I guess, forthright and brave to come forward because, you know, that's always a risk.
And, yeah, it sounds like she's saying other people don't. It's funny because on the one hand, she's saying other people, neighbors aren't seeing this and they don't necessarily believe her, but that other Hawaiians are seeing this. Like, you know, It's not just her, it's all around the island, but it's not her neighbors, which I think is interesting. I guess I wish there wasn't such a language barrier because then I could figure out, okay, were you told early on that you're a seer of some sort? Is that what this is? But then somehow what, this didn't hit you until later in your life? Because that's interesting too, if that's the case. But I guess we'll never get to the bottom of that. Sorry.
Or did she get to the point in age where she finally felt comfortable in simply saying what was going on that, you know, as a kid, maybe you're intimidated, you don't understand, you start to worry. And so maybe with time, she encountered others who could sort of say, yeah, this is okay. You know, I mean, I don't know, Jeremy. For me, I can tell you, I was raised Roman Catholic, and there were a lot of strange things that that happened in the course of religion that I was taught. But I was around a whole community of people where that was just accepted, and faith, an article of faith. And so I never was an outsider, and so I don't know what all that would mean. And I think it would be kind of a fearsome thing to realize that, oh, some people don't see this. I better be quiet.
Yeah, and this is a really strange place that way, too. I mean, it's an island, so obviously it's, even though it's called the Big Island, it's still an island, so it's a small, self-contained place. And so if consciousness at large is, in fact, affecting visions and interactions with some sort of impersonal or formless awareness realm, what have you got? You've got Hawaiians that date back as far as the Tahitians. You've got Hawaiians that date back further than the Tahitians, who were the original inhabitants. And you've got at least two types of Christian, the Christian who believes in Jesus and has been taught to block out all the Pele stuff, all the gods and all that. And, you know, I would say are taught to self-hate. But then you've also got Hawaiians who are indoctrinated into Christianity and consider Jesus to be one of the pantheon of gods or demigods, right? So you've got all of these different concentrations, and that's just between like the Euro-American and Hawaiian. And I believe Isabella is at least has been living in Hawaii pretty much her life, but she's Chinese. So there's that, right? There's also the consciousness of other places here, Japan especially, very heavily Japanese, especially in Oahu, which is another island. For those who don't know, there are several islands in this chain. You'd be surprised. So what does that, how does that affect what comes to us and how, you know, like, is there even just a tug of war, in consciousness at large of like this, how this thing presents itself? And I don't even mean like there are these gods and they're fighting, or these archetypes and they're battling who's going to present how. I just mean like, if we pull it in, from the imaginal realm somehow, if there is an influence of the collective in how we personally perceive it, does that create a struggle, or does that create a tide of this? So, I mean, there might be a way to see that. Like, if I did enough research into Hawaiian paranormal accounts and stuff like that, does it appear just like it does everywhere else? Does it appear differently in different places around the world? And then does it appear as a whole bunch of stuff here, because it's a concentrated area of a whole bunch of stuff? I guess there would be a way to find that out, wouldn't there?
Yeah, you'd have to travel have around to and start talking to people.
Or would I? Because now Netflix has started doing, like, you know, all kinds of TV shows from other countries dubbed. So I could just watch all the paranormal shows from other countries and see if ghosts appear to them the same way they do here, you know?
No. There's nothing like traveling, Jeremy.
What?
To shake.
Yeah. Have you heard of COVID?
You need to get out there.
Have you heard of the COVID virus?
Maybe, perhaps not today.
Oh, okay.
But after you get your vaccine or survive about, then we will be able to travel again. But there's nothing like that to kind of shake your perceptions, and then you can see things in a way that somebody that's lived in a place all their life simply doesn't.
Well, this is how lazy I am, Tyler. I'm now going to talk about something I can't even remember. did you see that Unsolved Mysteries? Have you watched that on Netflix at all, since they rebooted it?
I moved to a new house, I have severed almost all of my electronic.
Okay, well, it was on before that, because I think they're on season two now. And so I think it was in season one. I've just started watching just a couple of episodes. There was one, I think it was the Berkshires, but I can't remember the town. But anyway, I remember, you know, it was on a UFO sighting from there that took place in 1969. I think it begins with a K. I can't remember what where the town was. But it's an artistic community, of course. And the mystery of it is that pretty much the entire town knew about this having happened. And yet there's like nothing in the newspaper. There's no police reports. And there was one phone into a radio station. And of course, that phone in has been lost in time. So there's no real evidence that this ever happened except the testimony of these people. And it has all the hallmarks of a real account, but there's something about it that bothers me, Tyler. And I want to see if you, even though you haven't seen the episode, have you seen enough of these documentary type shows where they interview these people to know that there's a new category of skepticism for me, which is, I believe the event took place. I believe it happened roughly as you say it did, but there's something about you that I don't believe. I don't believe your premise. And the premise is, this happened. I didn't want it to happen. I didn't ask for this. It was just a one-off. And that's it. The trying to retain the purity, or what you interpret the audience will interpret as the purity of the thing that makes it real as a real alien encounter, which means that it must be a one-off. It must be, you know, mysterious, and you must not know what's going on. All of that sort of has to be retained for the sense of this to be aliens, and I don't buy it. Do you get that sense when you watch any of these shows? Like, can you look at a witness and go, that person's holding out because they think, or maybe Unsolved Mysteries themselves are editing it in such a way that they think this presents a coherent vision of what happened here. Do you get that sense?
I think you hit on something really critical. When you look at these shows, just exactly as you said, they are in fact edited to deliver a product. And so without one of us or both of us being there to really see the full, if you want to call it, scope of the data and talk to that person, I just don't know, Jeremy. I mean, I always wonder, you know, what was the slant of the show to be. And I think, you know, you probably have hit on that. They need some mystery. They need certain things that fall into the recognizable pattern so the audience will come along. And so I just really have to say, from those shows, you really can't tell much, or you shouldn't. My personal admonishment would be, don't internalize that too far as to be truth or not truth, either way.
All right. Well, you're no Jungian, but clearly you must know something about psychology. You must understand people to even a tiny degree. You've been on this planet long enough, Tyler. I'm going to give that to you. Does it make sense to you?
20 more years.
Can you imagine you, just yourself, something spectacular happened to you in 1969? Let's say you heard a voice in your head tell you to go home. And so you ran home, you see a UFO, it hits you with a beam of light. Then you remember sort of being on a ship, and you have about, I don't know, 15 minutes worth of memory to the 3 hours that you were gone. And then you reappear somewhere. Do you, A, suppress that forever and never talk about it, never research it, never look into any of this? Or do you, B, maybe seek out a hypnotist? Definitely read the literature and familiarize yourself with, like, what people claim aliens are and all of that stuff, so that when you talk about it, you're not just talking about, I thought they were little children. Now you're talking about, I thought they were little children, but I've since read that they're the Greys, and I'm like, oh my God, it's the Greys. Like, what makes sense to you? Because they try to keep this as pure as possible, and it just seems like a whitewash to me. I mean, it's like a cover up within the exposure, right? Like, they're trying to do the opposite of a cover up, and they end up covering the subject up. Does that make sense to you? Which person would you be if you were abducted by aliens? Completely incurious since 1969?
No, not completely incurious, but geez, I'm not going to tell anybody that. You know, come on. That's a good way to get beat up in gym class every week.
Right, but at some point in the 1980s, say, or the early 1990s, maybe abductions become in vogue. Do you still not tell anyone about it? Like, do you not seek out anyone for MUFON, any sort so-called researcher? Do you not fall into the hypnosis trap? Never?
If I had become aware that other people had, now this is just a personal opinion, and I'm not trying to say this is how it would go for everyone, but as going back to my religious community experience, if I was aware there were others, I would be more inclined maybe to come forward or speak to them. I don't know that I would come out publicly, and I don't know that I have that kind of courage. But I go back to your point about the whole phenomenon gets covered up by sort of our selective editing. That's kind of what we dug out with Project Core, with you and Jeff Ritzman, that we were looking at phenomena, I think, that were selected or driven into one particular very narrow slot when the paranormal scope was quite a bit larger, just on the people who volunteered to tell us stuff anonymously. So I really do worry that, yeah, we tend to hammer things into a preferred narrative, whether that's what you need for a TV show. I mean, you know, take a look at how science articles are written. You always have an introductory paragraph, and then the next two paragraphs, they'll basically have the experts speaking about it. And there's a way these things are done. And I think sometimes that inhibits us.
Yeah, and it's also just maybe more confounding to me because not to toot my own horn or anything, but I am 100% positive that with at least, maybe all of them, but at least 90% of the witnesses in this case who claim that they didn't want this, they didn't ask for this, why would they, it's only hurt their lives, blah, blah, there's nothing like this has happened to me before since, that within 5 seconds of speaking to them, because you know I've done this on this show every time, I would ask them, okay, anything else in your childhood? And there it would be. And it wouldn't necessarily be aliens and UFOs. It would be something else. Oh, yeah, well, yeah, me and my friends, you know, we used to like to go to the cemetery and play with a Ouija board and do seances, but that's not related to this. You know, you'd get that story. You know you would get that story. So why? I mean, it just strikes me, again, I don't know if I'm reading too much into the tooting my own horn here, but the fact that they didn't mention hypnosis on this, I gotta believe is because of what we did with exposing hypnosis in some way, made it not cool. You know what I mean? And so, like, I don't know. I feel like, I don't remember where I'm going with that. Oh, I guess I just, I still don't remember where I'm going with that. I don't remember where I'm going with that. Maybe it's for the best. Maybe the gods are telling me not to remember where you're going with that.
No, you're ready for full professor rank now.
I can't remember where I was going with this. I'm just so lost in my own words and not patting myself on the back that, yeah.
But if you do go back and you think about what Paratopia managed in terms of the hypnosis phenomenon, I think that work was very important. And there were other people, Jeremy, that got right in there. Scott Lilienfeld, the late Dr. Scott Lilienfeld, was there. There are other people that have pointed out issues and problems and similarities to some other bad sorts of things like recovered memories and whatnot. And a lot of those things were lost or weren't apparent to some folks, I think, because the information was kind of in silos, and we don't talk across the channels very often. So I'd say that, yeah, you and Jeff made some pretty interesting contributions there to the dialogue and how we view these things and maybe how we'll go forward.
Tyler, please plug your phone in. That wasn't on your end?
What the? No.
Huh. Maybe I shouldn't be asking.
No, the gods are against us.
I know. Well, I'm going to ask it anyway. Damn it, I'm asking it.
All right.
Not tooting my own horn or anything. But okay, I'm just, go with me on this. If, okay, let's take me out of the equation. I'm not tooting my own horn. Let's say that the producers of Unsolved Mysteries are sophisticated enough, have understood their audience enough to know that hypnotically retrieved memory will be called into question by enough of their audience that it's not worth doing anymore, or it can't work anymore in the way that it used to. Sound like a sophisticated tool for memory retrieval, then why are they sticking with the same alien narrative that was produced by hypnosis? So, I mean, because if you are paying attention to the people who have poo-pooed hypnosis, then surely you must be paying attention to the other part of that, which is within 5 seconds, I can pretty much assure you that this person who claims to have had only one encounter has had some other things in their life that are connected to this, but sort of do away with the aliens from outer space hypothesis. Why would you stick with that? Why get rid of one and not the other?
You know, I guess that my cynical answer would be that they understand that this sells, that there's great interest in the subject, so they want to approach it maybe in a slightly different way, but they want to approach that same subject. And if you go back and you look at how we work, it's maybe as aficionados of certain genres, like this is literature, there's a shorthand, and we kind of learn, and so we also, there's an expectation. And so I think that maybe they must try some of these things out and see how the audience is reacting to it. And they found the right formula to get people interested. I'm not clear that they're necessarily doing what we might want them to do in terms of research, but I think we have to couch everything with, this is really about entertainment, perhaps some education, but not necessarily hardcore research in the way that maybe Paratopia would have done it back in the day.
Well, not to toot my own horn or anything, but Tyler, I have been fascinating during this interview, so thank me for doing this.
as is always the case.
No, in all seriousness, thank you for doing this. Thank Isabella for doing this as well. But thank you for for coming on and you know, I don't know, what? Shooting from the hip with me.
Yeah, I think also for all the people who have experiences and have the courage to bring them forward, knowing what might befall them, I'd say thank you.
Aw. Is there anything you want to admit, buddy? I know you just moved. Liminal states. Tricks.
I can't find my microphone.
Is that it?
That's why. And then Skype has it turned on me. I got bad digital karma. So.
And you just hung up on
anyway.
Me. I think.
That's not true.
Oh. Well, all right. Well, we'll get you into a paranormal event one of these times. Actually, the fact that you don't have these paranormal events, is that evidence that because you didn't have it early on in life, you're not having it now?
Well, I'll tell you, honestly, Jeremy, I searched hard enough for it as a kid. When I was growing up in Western Iowa, I had a friend, Bob Reed, who also had similar interests in flying saucers. Back then it was quite interesting period because it was taken much more seriously to them than it is today. And so there were sightings. And one of the things that happened in our area were repeated reports of animal mutilations. So we would be out looking, you know, at the stars. I love the stars. I always have. And that kind of got me going into astronomy. And so it wasn't from lack of trying, you know, that didn't have these experiences that just didn't happen. But I think I told you, I thought I had one once when I'd come back from a trip and I was really jet lagged and I was out
just looking at the stars, and it was a really nice breezy night. And man, this light just kind of did a loop in front of me. And I finally figured out it was the wind that was blowing a saguaro cactus on the mountain across the way, and just enough to kind of make it wink in and out. But for the few seconds there, I was pretty taken by this. Whoa, whoa, there it is. So I tried.
Huh. What would have been really spectacular is if you had been abducted and then found out that there was nothing there.
Oh, yeah, wonderful. That would never appear on any show.
To be continued.
Oh, what you got? Nothing. Yeah, God. No marketability. Sorry.
Well, again, Isabella, if you're out there, Tyler Kochjohn, right here. Thank you both. Much appreciated. Thanks. Okay. And everyone else. And everyone listening, thank you for listening. Yeah. All right. We'll see you next time on The Experience.